toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Morata.
And this is our weekly podcast, our edition of our weekly spot on Breakfast with Taylor every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on RTRFM 92.1. And yeah, we cover it all. This episode, we're covering two new releases into cinemas, but you know, maybe you'll be listening to this in a couple of months' time. I'm sure they'll be on a streaming platform, but it's definitely, you know, this episode, we're taking you to the moon and back.
We're covering the gamut, films that are bad and films that are fine, I guess. the whole spectrum of cinema's pleasures.
Yeah, and we talk a little bit about it. One actor or thespian or director who I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan of, Kenneth Branagh, but he's directed another film, and this time it's something a bit more personal. It's about his childhood in Belfast, and it's called Belfast, and this is a movie that you'll be reviewing this episode.
That's right, but first, Tristan, we get to enjoy you regaling Taylor Strano and myself with Roland Emmerich's latest disaster film. I'm not even going to give the preamble to it because I think there's enough insanity for you to describe, but we're talking about Moonfall.
If you're watching this, then you know by now a huge problem is heading our way. An emergency meeting is being called at our usual place immediately. Free bagels.
I've made a shocking discovery. I need you to get me in touch with NASA immediately.
Well, NASA and I aren't really on speaking terms these days.
Oh, that'll change. When you tell them that the moon is out of orbit.
It is 7:30 on a Friday morning, and staring down the barrel of an extremely warm weekend means that you should stay inside, put the aircon or the fan on, and flick on a film. Two people to help you make those choices are Tristan and Simon, our Movie Squad. Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Hello.
I say stay home and flick on a film, but like really you'll have to go to the cinema to see these ones, right?
Yes, that's true. These particular ones we're reviewing are in cinema only releases, but it does feel like, you know, that hybrid model of, well, you can watch it at home, you can watch it in the cinema. It's gone straight to streaming, even though it's a big budget blockbuster. But this week, we are purely in the realm of the theatrical delights. Is that fair to say, Tristan?
Widescreen, big screen event. But yeah, I mean, it's like I was on Disney Plus the other day and going, the French Dispatch is already up here. Like, it's strange how, I mean, it's not that strange because of where we are. But yeah, if people, they can have the cinematic experience, but if they hang around for a month.
Look, if you've been listening to Movie Squad for a while and you can sort of cast your mind back to last year when we covered Mortal Kombat and you've just been waiting, like that's on Netflix now. You can totally go and watch it.
It's on both Netflix and Binge.
Oh, okay. And, I knew you could do that.
And was available to watch at home upon its cinema release for like $30. So it's a weird, and I still haven't seen it, but it will be.
There's so many chances to see it.
Which is the terrible part of that. Makes me go, did I really want to watch it? I do. But no, these two films, if you want to see them right now, you're going to have to get into the theatre.
All right, well, let's start with the first one. Tristan, talk us through Moonfall.
Moonfall. So this is a new film from director Roland Emmerich, who's been responsible for science fiction and disaster movies like Independence Day and The Day After Tomorrow and 2012. I mean, he's also made other movies as well, but I think these are the ones that kind of get commonly associated with his name. And I don't know how to, you know, Simon, are you a Roland Emmerich fan? Do you like these movies or?
No, I think they're all bad. I'm actually pulling up his filmography now because I just sort of had that moment of going, has he made anything that I would classify as even an okay film?
Right, right.
And I didn't mind the Independence Day resurgence from a few years ago, which is just dumb fun. And the first Independence Day is fun as well. Mm. But I think they're all objectively bad. Godzilla being another one, of course. And then he's made these films that nudge respectability, like Midway. There was a Stonewall movie. I forget the title of it. It may just be Stonewall. That are clearly overreaches. So I think he's back in his preferred milieu with Moonfall, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I mean, Taylor, do these titles strike anything in you? Fear, joy, or?
Yeah, well, interesting you say fear. So The Day After Tomorrow came out. I think I was like 9 years old film came out, and I just remember it being like very, very terrifying and quite scary. And you shouldn't have an existential crisis as a 9-year-old, but I don't know why I watched it and did.
But has it informed your career now, where you you do these, you know, your weekly stories about the environment and your climate activism, Taylor.
Look, I don't want to say yes. Like, I don't want to give him that much power over my life. Look, of the films that I've seen, I have not loved them, and I've definitely not revisited them.
It's funny because, I mean, they fall into a kind of a long-standing tradition of Hollywood movies, disaster movies, but they're kind of accelerated ever since the 90s, and they always have this delight in, it's a weird kind of mix of, you know, yeah, like it's might be underscoring something like climate change issues or fearing the Mayan calendar or whatever in 2012. But like this idea of seeing kind of like cities and buildings topple and people kind of running away from like an avalanche of just like destruction. But because we're associated with one or two characters, we're like, oh, thank God they're safe. But even though there's like billions of people who have just died, like, off, you know, kind of off screen or not kind of focused on in the CGI chaos. So, look, yeah, it is back in his wheelhouse. It's another film. But, you know, with everything that's going on these days, the kind of apocalyptic climate in the air, what's one threat that we haven't reckoned with? The moon. The moon. The moon could be the source of our eventual end. And, so this film is about basically the moon changing its kind of gravitational direction and thus causing cataclysmic events on Earth. But before we get there, we start out in space in the opening moments of the film where we have astronauts Hal Berry and Patrick Wilson and someone else who's not so famous, so we can get a sense of how they're going to last in the opening moments of this movie. They're up in space, they're fixing a satellite or something, they're riffing around the lyrics of Africa by Toto, like, you know, getting them wrong, getting them right. So these are cool astronauts, all right? So they're listening to cool music. And then this kind of black, inky cloud kind of comes upon them, and in a retread of scenes that we've seen before in things like Ad Astra Ad Gravity, there's a disaster that happens, this kind of weird cloud goes to the moon. Patrick Wilson has to basically kind of save the day because Hal Berry's knocked out and pilots a kind of a shuttle dead of electronics down to Earth. When he lands, NASA, there's a cover-up. They say, what inky black cloud? It was kind of your own fault. He goes from hero to zero. His wife leaves him. His son doesn't respect him anymore.
His wife leaves him?
Yeah. And like 10 years later, we catch up with the movie where he is just like a cool astronaut who like, ex-astronaut, I should say, who fixes his engine, does talks in museums. But there's something going on. There's something happening. And the one person who knows what's going on is this guy, John Bradley, who it took me a long time to learn his name and that he's from
Game of Thrones. He was Samwell?
No, don't look at me. I did not watch Game of Thrones.
He was the sort of the friend to... Oh, I've forgotten every character from Game of Thrones. Jon Snow.
He was on the watch. Yeah.
How soon we forget these cultural phenomenons.
Yeah, so I'm watching this guy thinking he's kind of like Cut Price, Nick Frost. He's like a kind of funny, renowned British guy. And he is this kind of person who has a theory about megastructures, that there are planets out there that are hollow and contain kind of a star for energy, and that they're basically kind of these sort of sources of energy, these ships, and this is kind of responsible for what's happening to the moon. So it's a far out crackpot theory, and it's an interesting film at this day and age where it posits a character who has no scientific credentials, who has a kind of way out theory. And eventually he's kind of shown to be the person who knows what's going on. So this is a strange film. But basically he gets, he meets Patrick Wilson's character. Hal Berry understands that something's wrong's going on. A rescue mission has to be launched to save the world from what's happening with the moon, which I won't spoil. Meanwhile, we're also spending time, a lot of time, with family members associated with these main characters. Much like in Day After Tomorrow in 2012, the focus is split from what's going on up in space and what's going on the ground. So we see Patrick Wilson's son, played by Charlie Plummer, kind of, you know, driving along with Hal Berry's son and her babysitter, and kind of doing that whole thing where they sort of leap off bridges while kind of, you know, flash floods and gravitational waves try to crush everyone. So it's definitely the same old stuff from Roland Emmerich, but this film is a wacky film. The best way I could describe this, and I won't be alone in saying it, it's like Interstellar with a head concussion. It's a science fiction film that has echoes of other movies, but the whole thing is accelerated at such a pace that it's hard to kind of go, like, you really have to leave your suspension of disbelief, but, or, you know, that has to be activated sincerely, because at one point some character goes, because the moon is coming close to the Earth, days will be shorter, months will be shorter, and it feels like that in this movie, because, like, they do one mission, it doesn't go well, and then before you know it, they've kind of assembled another team, and it just kind of beggars belief. But that's kind of the fun of this movie, or the main fun I had with it, was that it was just completely ridiculous and over the top. This cast, did anyone in this cast excite you? This also has Donald Sutherland in a bit supporting role. It has Michael Peña as the kind of the new husband to Patrick Wilson's ex-wife, and some other people as well. But I don't know, like, the three leads, Hal Berry, Patrick Wilson,
and John Bradley. look, Patrick Wilson, I find is a very likable leading man. It was really fun early on in his career because he primarily played guys whose masculinity was completely just taken away from him, or rather, you know, he was shamed. And so when you say, like, this character's wife leaves him and his son doesn't respect him as a man anymore because of something that happened in space, I find quite amusing, because it does harken back to in Watchmen when he played Night Owl and Lakeside Terrace and Little Children. But I'm not expecting a performance of that caliber. Halle Berry as well. I don't even think I've seen a Halle Berry film in the last 10 years, not because she hasn't been working, but she's sort of moved away from her A-list status where you would see her in these big films, and has now done a lot of, I think she directed a movie for Netflix. She just sort of is working in a different area as well. So I don't quite know what to expect, except for something that's clearly not, you know, scientifically unimpeachable or peer-reviewed. Taylor, I don't know how you feel about this particular assemblage in this context.
Look, I feel like in the world right now, there are so many things to contend with of the doom and gloom nature. Like, do we really need to make a film where, like, now the moon is the next threat? Like, is that
the moon
necessary?
Is our friend,
right?
I think.
Like, I don't know. I don't. This doesn't appeal to me at all. Like, go figure.
yeah. Look.
But I just feel like, you know, where Don't Look Up was great was because it was so far out and silly, but it was also very much like, this is actually happening. Like, do we need to?
I dispute the use of the word "great," but yes, I appreciate your point.
I feel like with the moon, it's like, do we need to add to the list?
Yeah, I mean, at least that Don't Look Up had a strong kind of message, and this one, it's hard to see that, because where it goes, and I won't spoil it. I mean, like, the turns it takes in the last act are pretty, like, just bewildering. But it's also, I guess, part of the fun. Patrick Wilson, you were talking about, it's just funny to see, because usually he's like this, like, wounded masculinity, like this straight, stiff arrow. And here he's kind of affecting this, like, McConaughey, like, leather jacket, kind of beard stubble, kind of, like, cocky thing. So that's just funny to me to watch him do that. And look, I thought that John Bradley was going to take me out of the movie with his character, but then I read that he replaced Josh Gad due to a scheduling conflict, and I'm just thanking my lucky stars. Yeah,
that is the true asteroid that we all dodged, I think, on that one.
Yeah, but this movie just has some weird touches. Like, there's a point where his character, who is the science geek, at one point says, what would Elon Musk do? And he's not saying it kind of with irony. It's a joke, but he's going, what would Elon do? Like, and then there's a point later on when we find out that SpaceX has kicked in, like, help for this rescue mission. And I'm just like, did Elon Musk, like, give money to this movie or something? Because it's definitely, like, it's kind of relationship to space and to, yeah, like, the threat is the moon rather than all the satellite junk that's up there from all these kind of billionaires kind of doing whatever they want. Anyway, this film, I wouldn't pay money to see it. It's it was fun to see it. I went with another RTR presenter, KL. We had a really fun time just kind of, like, looking at each other, kind of making just jokes about the kind of the dialogue. At one point, the two characters, one says, like, if I'm wrong, you know, if you're wrong, God help us. And if I'm right, God help us all. And I was like, that's exactly lifted from Crimson Tide. This movie is has no shame. But look, I can't recommend this to anyone to go see in a cinema. I think the best way to see it is probably if you have nothing else to see and it's a lazy afternoon on a streaming platform. You know, the kind of movie that you can have in the background while you're doing kind of like the...
It's a Folger washing movie.
Exactly. Like, it's fun. It is kind of goofy. It is a throwback to these, like, 60s sci-fi movies in a way, but it's also, as you saying, with everything that's going on in the world, it doesn't feel essential, and particularly when other great science fiction disaster movies are there to kind of just rewatch. So Moonfall, out in cinemas now. I wouldn't recommend it.
All right, out in cinemas, not that you should maybe go and see it. That is Moonfall for Movie Squad this week. Thank you to Sophie, who has texted in. As soon as I framed Don't Look Up as a camp classic, I started to see the light. I don't think we should compare them side by side, clearly, but nonetheless. You're on Movie Squad. We'll take a quick break and back for part two in just a moment.
Oh, holy God.
Mama says if we went across the water, they wouldn't understand the way we talk.
If they can't understand you, then they're not listening. You know who you are, don't you? Your buddy from Belfast, where everybody knows you.
Hey, buddy! Your mom's calling you BS!
We're looking to cleanse the community a wee bit.
You wouldn't want to be the old man out in the street.
Touch my family and I'll kill you.
Are we going to have to leave Belfast?
We'll fight this together.
This is it?
This is what?
This is war.
You're in the middle of Movie Squad right now. Thank you to Chow for getting in touch. You can as well, 0405 921 921. All right, Simon, take us home. Maybe a more positive review for Belfast.
So this is the new film from writer-director Kenneth Branagh, who obviously made his bones on the stage and with Shakespearean adaptations that were highly regarded, like Henry V or Henry V and Hamlet. And then in his most recent iteration of his career, sort of took a turn to blockbuster filmmaking, directed Thor, which at the time was seen as, oh, this makes sense, Shakespearean drama to Shakespearean Marvel. And then he parlayed that into Cinderella, the Jack Ryan shadow recruit movie, and also continues working as an actor, pops up every so often, and has directed and starred in the Murder on the Orient Express films, and then also Tenet from last year, which giving one of Tristan's least favoured performances of that year. So obviously a well-regarded, if flawed, filmmaker. And he's now made this movie, Belfast, that is semi-autobiographical. He doesn't star in it, but it is very heavily inspired by his youth as a child growing up during the Troubles in Ireland, in Belfast specifically. And it stars Jude Hill, a sort of newcomer, young kid, who is living a fairly happy-go-lucky life as a child, with his ma and pa, played by Katrina Balfe, who people may know from Outlander, and Jamie Dornan, who is from the 50 Shades franchise and also the TV show The Fall. He, pa, works away in England most of the weeks and returns home every second weekend to bring some money back. So it's really ma who's raising Buddy, the Jude Hill / Kenneth Branagh character, and his brother, Will. And it's the year 1969, the film begins, he's playing in the street, he's got a shield kind of throwing forward to the premise that one day he'll be the Shakespearean actor. And then unfortunately, the Troubles literally come to town with some Protestants rioting in the street and actually firebombing their little strip because some Catholics do live there and have been accepted into this Protestant community. So Buddy and his family, they're Protestants, but Buddy's really wrestling with this idea of why do Protestants dislike the Catholics? Why do they want them out? Because their neighbours, their friends are Catholics, and the girl he has a crush on at school even is Catholic. But nonetheless, the movie isn't really dealing with the horrors of the Troubles and even the moral reckoning of it. It is primarily told through Buddy's perspective, and that includes his day-to-day life as a kid. He, you know, loves going to the movies. That's an escape for him. And the film itself, Belfast, is shot in black and white, but when they go to the cinema, the pictures they see on the screen are in vibrant colour, suggesting, well, that's taking him to another world. Now, Tristan, I do want to ask about Kenneth Branagh and his career, and it has been a long one, an Academy Award nominated one, but one that we've poked fun at often over the years. When you hear about him going back to his roots, making a simpler movie, but about himself, how do you feel? Is that what you expect from Kenneth Branagh, or a hopeful change?
When I saw this film was announced, I'm not a fan of Kenneth Branagh because I just think he's kind of like a ham and has given some really terrible performances. And, you know, I really enjoy like Tenet now, but like I just wish he was like edited out or replaced because of it. And particularly like there's two roles where he's done a really bad Russian accent, as he's just like really bad at it. But at the same time, we often associate him with being kind of like the most British English actor. You know, he was in the kind of compared to Laurence Olivier in terms of his sort of like resurgence of Shakespeare in cinema in the 90s. I had no idea that, you know, he was basically Irish and that this is his kind of background. So that was a surprise to me, like reading about the kind of the context and how he basically changed his accent as he kind of went on and moved away. So I have not seen Belfast. I do find this a bit more interesting a prospect for him as a director to explore than watching him try to be the matinee star with these like Death on the Nile and Murder on the Orient Express, where it just feels like he's kind of clinging on by kind of playing some iconic character. I do find it also interesting that it sort of seems to be a kind of an ongoing trend with directors getting to a point where they go, look, well, let me like look at my life. Let me do the kind of the memoir film. There's been Licorice Pizza recently has a bit of that. The Alfonso Cuarón film.
Roma,
you know, and particularly with this black and white cinematography feels very much inspired by that. So it is kind of curious to see these directors, and a lot of them being male, look at their kind of time growing up and whether that kind of wrestles with nostalgia in any way. Is this a nostalgic film?
That's the interesting thing about it, right? Is like when you think about movies that are made, why are they made? It's like, well, you know, certainly biographical movies or movies about specific times, it's like, well, this was a pivotal moment in time. And it is interesting, the idea of Kenneth Branagh saying, well, this was a pivotal moment in time because it turned me into who I am. And on the micro level, it's like, yes, that is important to you. Is it important in the wider context of our existence? And when talking about the Troubles, you know, is there justification in saying, I'm going to make a movie about the Troubles and how it formed me into the guy that would eventually make Murder on the Orient Express a remake? But I think there is enough, there's enough sort of grace notes in this movie and enough that's delicate that justifies what is otherwise actually a very broad comedy and a pretty hammy movie as well. The performances themselves, I'm glad Kenneth Branagh's not in it. The performances are pretty good. Katrina Balfe's really good as the mum. Kieran Hines and Judi Dench play Buddy's grandparents, and they're really good. And Lara McDonald plays a character called, it is Moira. And she's sort of Buddy's neighbor. She's an older girl and she keeps trying to recruit him into her gang. And she's really funny in this. And Taylor, you know, you grew up on the hardscrabble streets of Mandurah. I mean, you must have been in a youth gang at some point.
Oh, stop it.
Does any of this kind of feel appealing to you?
The film does feel appealing just from the little bits and pieces that I've seen. Like, it looks quite lovely and I'd like to see it. Also, that particular sort of period of history is quite interesting and I'd like to see sort of how it's explored in the film. But I have to like clarify, I was not in a youth gang.
You weren't a street tough?
No. Oh, God. I went to like Catholic school, Simon. Come on.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
So what I will say, though, is this has been a heavily acclaimed movie. It's been nominated and won a bunch of awards. It was just nominated for a few BAFTAs last night, including Best Film, BAFTAs being the British Academy Awards. And it will no doubt be nominated for Best Film at the coming Oscars. I don't think it's quite at that caliber. You know, when you put it up against your Licorice Pizzas and Dunes and Power of the Dog, which will all likely be nominated as well.
And Spider-Man No Way Home.
It might be on par with that. Because there are lovely moments, the performances are really nice, but it is ultimately very broad. And I think even the black and white cinematography, you know, it's not Roma, where it feels gritty and realistic. It's not a kitchen sink drama. It's not a Mike Lee film, certainly. And it's not even Bloody Sunday, the Paul Greengrass movie about the Troubles as well. This is, it has a real sheen to it. It's definitely got rose-tinted glasses, even though it's black and white. And that was part of my problem, is that when we see a buddy watching these movies like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang in full color, and it's like, oh, that's the fantasy world that I want to be taken away to. I feel like the artifice of the reality, quote unquote, is such that you never really feel the divide between real and fantasy, and that it's all kind of a Hollywood construct in this movie. So, you know, I don't think people will watch it and go like, wow, the darkness of the Troubles really impacted. It ends up being just a kind of nice family dramedy. But plenty in here to like. Certainly if you come from an immigrant background, and I think of a movie like Brooklyn as well, which dealt with a lot of this with Saoirse Ronan. Similarly, very nice movie. But Belfast, yeah, has its appeal, but I don't think it quite hit the level of greatness that is being stamped on it by some of the award bodies.
It'll be interesting for folks out there, like you said, who is coming to this film and why you're attracted to it. If you are one of those people, would love to hear from you. 0405 921 921. Tristan, have you seen this film?
Belfast, no. And yeah, but I think like what you were saying before about, like, you know, the other film that we reviewed, Moonfall, I think definitely that people will probably be more in a headspace to see something like this, even if it is rose-tinted glasses and nice, opposed to a movie where the world ends because the moon's going to come and kill us. So, yeah, like, I haven't seen it. Hopefully I'll catch up with it at one point, but, yeah.
Two ends of the spectrum this morning. That is Movie Squad for another week. Tristan and Simon, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tristan.
Oh, thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to be rude.
Of course not. you can catch up with more Movie Squad next Friday and, of course, restream through our website and the Movie Squad podcast too.
Well, there you go, another great episode of the Movie Squad podcast, and sometimes that's how it goes. You know, we have episodes where we rave and say, look, these are must-see five-star movies, and then, yeah, you get 2.5 to 3-star movies. Not that we do star ratings, but, you know, this is like, well, I've not seen Belfast, but I did, you know, like your review, Simon, and I feel like maybe at one point, it's definitely, I feel like a movie that I might be watching with my parents at some point or something like that. It feels like that's the, you know, the family kind of orientated sort of appeal of the film.
Yep, and I didn't say it on the air, 90 minutes.
90 minutes? 90 Hello.
Minutes. I can also confidently say that I will never watch Moonfall. Like, I actually can't even fathom the scenario where I would watch it. And it's funny where I politely told the representative of the film that I couldn't make the critic screening, the preview screening that you attended, and they very kindly said, oh, well, I can send you a double pass so you can catch it in your own time. And I had to be honest and say, I don't think this is one I'm going to cash in the babysitter for. So, yeah, even at home, I don't see a scenario where I'll watch Moonfall. But we should tease. Mm. Let's not give away the titles. But next week, we'll be talking about some very interesting, provocative, and maybe great films. I think we'll definitely be dealing closer with high-end cinema. But there is one film in particular that will spark a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah, we're in a, you know, at the time of this recording, we're in February. You know, a lot of kind of films that have been held over on Australian releases that are like, I don't know, like award contenders or critically acclaimed films from the back end of 2021. Yeah, it's a great time to be experiencing movies, and I'm looking forward to our conversations on air. 7:30 a.m. Friday morning with Breakfast with Taylor on RTR-FM, or otherwise you can download and restream these great podcasts that we're releasing. And please review, rate, share the word, particularly for, you know, if you know someone who doesn't listen to RTR-FM, which I don't see why there would be someone who doesn't listen to it.
But, and how do you know this person?
Yeah.
Why are they in your social circle?
But let them know about this podcast where we, like, you know, we talk about, you know, movies of all kinds. So, yeah, please spread the word. And there you go. Thank you so much, Simon. This has been another great episode of the Movie Squad podcast.
Thank you, Tristan, and we'll see you next week.